This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Frida Liu as Tech Talk. Karamjit Singh from Digital News Asia joins us again as he gives us a roundup of the tech ecosystem locally and regionally. Welcome, Karamjit.
Thank you.
Now, first item, MOL's bumpy ride on NASDAQ. So share with us some of the nuances to this story. After all, you were there, the listing.
Yeah, I was. So I feel a certain connection to this story also, you know, because I was the only journalist that MOL invited. I think there was somebody from Bernama there go, so to go for the event. And I guess it was a historic event. I've been on the show talking about it. So to get to the current situation is, you know, they listed then. High expectations. You know, they were selling the stock at you know, $12.50. And it got listed at on the day of its listing is at $10, and then it closed at $8 US. You know, I'm just rounding it up. And I was there, and then, you know, they were saying that, look, you know, you cannot be distracted by the share price. You know, it will take care of itself if you take care of the business. And MOL, after that, were talking about, you know, aiming even for $1 billion in revenue at some point. And it has all come. So the company is not a bad company. So at the moment, those dreams, lofty dreams, have come crashing down. Because right after they launched, they went listed in October of 2014. The next month, when they delayed announcing the results, and then they said the CFO had resigned for personal reasons. Now, maybe in Southeast Asia, as a VC, a regional VC out of Singapore said, that news can be quickly absorbed by the market. But in the NASDAQ, where scrutiny is much higher,
right.
It caused alarms, and then you suddenly had class action suits, and this causes the company management to be distracted with handling this, and then you're not growing the business. And he brings this up because he feels that MOL probably listed too early, which is ironic for us. So this is a very well-respected VC who didn't want to go on to comment with his observations here. But he says that he felt they were too early to go on the NASDAQ, although the company is, you know, 14 years old, right, by the time it got listed. He said the governance and expectations of the market, they are just at a different level. He felt they should have further built out the business. And also remember before that, two, 3 years before that, if you go on DNA and you follow, they've been making acquisitions around the region. And when you make acquisitions in emerging markets, it takes longer time to digest and get them aligned with the parent company. And one interesting observation that one of the MOL senior brass told me is that when you make acquisitions in emerging markets, they bring in somebody to handle the tech for that company to make sure it's much more digitally aligned. And the idea is to acquire new users, right? It's just a goal rush for acquiring new users before your rivals do. And then the second one is you bring in an operations person to make sure that everything else is taken care of. But finance is left to the local company that you acquire.
Okay.
And then Vietnam then, you know, had an issue which is reporting, and unfortunately it blew up at the time that they were already listed, and then it just caused some issues there, you know. And then a few months after that, the following year in March, Ganesh stepped down as the CEO of MOL Global, and then in November of last year, he stepped down as the CEO of MOL Access Portal, which is the main company where most of MOL's revenue was coming from too, at least within Malaysia and the region. And then he now actually, last month, he actually stepped down as executive chairman too. So he's got no more role in the company, but it was his from the beginning, right, to build. Along with Vincent Tan, Sri Vincent Tan, who was his investor. And Ganesh has said that was patient money. But very interesting that the buzz out there is that the investors got a bit impatient and they wanted the company to be listed before it was ready. Now, Ganesh will not go on the record to say anything about this. He's already now left the company, although it's part of his DNA, right? But I think he's now just moving on to something else. He's achieved something very few people have, which is get the company listed, right, on the NASDAQ. You know, and people need to remember that. So if this sounds like a defense, it's not. But in one part of my mind, saying you're defending him, and I'm just being very spontaneous and open here. Look, he had a stroke, right? I wouldn't say a major stroke, but a stroke that left him with some physical, you know, handicap that he has now in the process of overcoming. But that happened like in August of the year before. And then in February of 2014, he started the process of getting the roadshow and getting listed. And that took up all of his time. And by October, you were listed, right? Just within 4 months, 5 months of having a serious, you know, health scare, you just get back on the horse and you're driving fast to get that listing. And you want to ask, was that a wise thing to do? You admire the courage and the tenacity, but was he being pushed to get that there also? Because the numbers are interesting. They were trying to sell 19.5 million shares, Frida. They actually managed to sell 13.5 million at the time of the IPO. And 6 million of these shares belong to shareholders. And out of the 168 million US raised, 75 million of that went to selling shareholders. And Vincent Tan and some other people were key shareholders. Ganesh actually didn't sell any shares. Mm. He sold shares by virtue of being in a company called MOL Ventures. That's because he was a minority shareholder. It was him and Vincent Tan there. So he actually ended up buying $300,000 worth of shares even then. Okay. You know, as of a few months ago, showing his confidence in the company. But now that it's being delisted, from the US market, you also wonder about its possible impact on the ecosystem in Southeast Asia,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Which is the second part of the topic now, which is linked to that, which is, will it have any impact on Southeast Asia? And we spoke, so this story, we spoke to a couple of VCs and they said no. One of them was Vinny Laurie, who's a founding partner in Golden Gate Ventures. And he says that he points out that $2 billion US has been invested in the region since the start of this year, 4 months, with Lazada, Tokopedia, and Garena. So he thinks that the region is booming and the MOL news won't hurt it and won't cast a shadow on the Southeast Asian startup ecosystem. But he says that maybe Malaysian tech-related stocks may need to have their reputation in the U.S. rehabilitated. And even one NASDAQ, US-based VC, also told us the same thing. I think the reputation of Malaysian tech companies has been tarnished and they need to restore that reputation. Whoever goes for a listing next will have the shadow of MOL in the back of mind of investors there. And then we also spoke to Bikesh, who's also been on the show before. And Bikesh says that he doesn't think it's going to hurt Ganesh's reputation. So we got a bit personal with Bikesh saying, will it hurt Ganesh's reputation? And he says no. And he made this great point, right, Bikesh? I thought we were trying to embrace failure into our Asian culture,
exactly,
right, to promote entrepreneurship. So at the end of the day, we take it that Ganesh has got battle scars and wounds, and you wait proudly because he's picking himself up and moving on to the next venture with the lessons learned. And I tell you, entrepreneurs are actually seeking him out for mentorship and guidance too, because he's done so much, he's got so much knowledge between his eardrums or eyeballs, but people want to tap into that and lessons learned too. Mm. So I think, you know, amazing story. The good thing is the impact on the ecosystem will not be significant, very minor. Cautionary tale for entrepreneurs, if you're going to get listed in the US, you better be ready that your company, once it's got listed, you know, revenues are moving on at a nice steady pace. Otherwise, right, you're going to dig yourself a hole. And if your share price goes below $1 NASDAQ, you're going to get a warning from NASDAQ to bring it up. Otherwise, you're going to have to end up getting delisted.
Okay. Now, besides, moving into another story, besides the Chinese making a splash, we now have the Arabs in the startup picture too. So what's the story here?
So this is a company doing last mile logistics, right? And it's technology enabled, which I think is important. It's using technology, and here it's actually, they say they use algorithms to solve complex logistic issues and optimize delivery routes. So, and it also forges partnerships with existing companies out there in the ecosystem. But now they've raised $30 million US in this current round, which is Series B. They're not going to go out and acquire their own vans and infrastructure too, because then you control the brand promise to your end customer. But the company that invested in them is a Dubai-headquartered Abraj Group, and they're a private equity company. So they led the round. Leading the round just means that you are the single, there may be five in VCs investing in there, you've put in the single biggest chunk, and therefore you set the terms for what the conditions are for the money being released to the entrepreneur. What's significant here is that last year in March, Ninja Van, cool name, right? They raised $2.5 million US. So in the space of 13 months, they have more, they've X 11 times their valuation, right? Or they raised X 11 times the money. I don't know what the valuation is. Mm. For you to raise so much money, your valuation must be quite good too, because you don't want to give up too many of your shares. And it's significant because over the last many months, you hear of VCs talking about entrepreneurs raising money on down rounds. A down round means that you've raised money at a lower valuation than the previous round. So you're taking money and you're giving up much more for every dollar that you raise. Or it can be a flat round, meaning your valuation has remained the same. Although you may have made progress in moving the company forward, valuation is the same. But these guys have have debunked that, and they've definitely got an up round. And you've got now Middle East investors in too, and with everybody now talking about more Chinese investors coming in, it's nice that Abraj Group, you know, sees value in Ninja Van. And credit to the co-founder and CEO of Ninja Van, Lai Cheng Wen, to have built the company that way. And you see Ninja, Abra, when they talk about why they made the investment, they say they're impressed with Ninja Van's technology platform. If you're a startup, you must have a technology component to your game. The management and operational capabilities, which means that they can deliver, right? Everybody wants to be able to execute. These guys are executing. And they think that they've got the required innovation in this sector too. Okay. What's interesting about Abraj is that this is their 28th investment in Southeast Asia. And I'm going, whoa, which means that really they've been investing in property or buildings, right? And this is probably their first, into the technology space. So it's interesting. So this is a nice counterbalance to maybe, you know, the MOL thing. And of course, with Alibaba coming into Lazada in a big way, you know, everybody's abuzz about the possibilities.
Okay.
And the message here is that with all these investors now looking much more seriously in the region, if you've already built a regional company, from whether you're based out of Singapore or Myanmar and you're in 3 or 4 countries, you have a presence there, an investor coming in and likes your space, you're going to enjoy the benefits of having built that 3-4 country presence. They're going to inject their money in and help you, you know, turbo boost your acceleration even further.
All right, we're going to talk about Indonesia this, right?
Offense and defense.
I'm just saying from Digital News Asia, this is Tech Talk BFM 89.9.
Bulletins for managers, BFM 89.9.
Good afternoon. It's Tech Talk. Karamjit Singh from Digital News Asia here with me. And, of course, he's doing a roundup of the tech ecosystem. We've gone around the world. We went to MOL and NASDAQ. And, of course, we talked about the Chinese and the Arabs. And there's a story from an Indonesian team. First telecom plays aggressive defense, and now it goes on the offense.
Yeah. So it's telecom, right? In Malaysia, the incumbent is telecom. In Indonesia, it's telcom.
Telcom.
So it was short of one E. So yeah, so what's happening, what's interesting about this story is that, PT Telkom Indonesia, managed to get the regulator to block US video streaming service Netflix in late January, saying under the umbrella that it was protecting Indonesian consumers from unregulated content. And now they've entered into a partnership with Malaysian, you know, video on demand regional player iFlix, and that's going to be available through Telkom's Indie Home broadband service. So here you've got Telkom with its Unify. In Indonesia, their home broadband service is called Indie Home, and what this collaboration is going to do, which is great for iFlix, it's going to give 1.5 million Indie Home subscribers access to 20,000 hours of iFlix content from Japanese, Korean, Turkish, Hollywood box office hits. So interesting, Hollywood box office and US TV series. So when Telkom delivers it, it's not, you know, unregulated and it's not harmful to Indonesian consumer. When Netflix comes in, hey, you know, it's the halal, you know, right? Yeah, we need to protect you. So you just see how everybody's just trying to protect their turf, especially the incumbent, you know, players, whether you're telco, your broadcaster, whatever means possible. So this is what's happening there. And Indonesia is now the fourth market for iFlix because they're already in Malaysia, Thailand and the Philippines. And
Huge.
So they're also going to expand into Sri Lanka, tiny, right? You go from huge to Sri Lanka and Vietnam as well. And even Middle East and Africa, according to its co-founder and CEO, Mark Britt. But they're also looking at local market content. So he was there at this press conference in Indonesia and my team was there. And he says that, and everybody says that local content is the key. So, and you know, iFlix here already announced Azran, you know, the Malaysian head of operations, said that they're actually going to go into even big budget, you know, global production. That's going to be expensive. But I met somebody from iFlix and he says that they want to take a crack at this and try to produce, you know, a global hit, you know, with Malaysian funding. You don't know where it's going to be filmed or not. It doesn't matter.
Right.
But the funding and the IP ownership, you know, comes from iFlix. And so you've got local content and you've got, international content. Now, it's going to be operating on the Indonesian content will have tight censorship rules, but you got to play by the rules of the country, right? And that's you cannot do anything about that.
Right.
And they've got a new CEO in Indonesia, Cam Walker. So I probably think he's an Aussie. But, he says we're going to make sure that our content complies with their censorship rules. And those who are still in doubt can apply parental control features because they've got a dashboard you can use. So it's all very interesting in what's going on there. And even the local telco, they're happy. You know, it's, we're collaborating with four local production houses, you know, to produce local content too. And this is the competitor of iFlick, which is Hook from out of Singapore, also saying we're going to do the same. So everybody's going into Indonesia, you're trying to, and you're using local content as the key to open up the market. And we'll see how it goes. So there's a very nice, you go to this article, there's a great table there that shows a comparison within four of the services. You've got iFlix, you've got Netflix, you've got Hook, Tribe. And we still use Netflix because you can use VPN services to access Netflix, right? Mm. And it gives you an example of what the market is going to be able to consume there. And you've got Axiata, which is, you know, Malaysian by Axiata, CEO, speaking, saying that the Indonesians are crazy about Korean shows, which is why it managed to convince, you know, Axiata to collaborate with bring Tribe to Indonesia. So Tribe is another content channel. I think this is with the Axiata link there. So bring that over and you've got a lot of Korean channels.
Okay. Now let's talk about who is crushing it. What is Property Guru crushing?
Well, they claim now that they've grown their market share in Malaysia from 20% to 42% in the last year. And they claim to be the number one online property portal in Southeast Asia. Mm. Now, I think they're starting to make these claims because you want to just get the word out there that you're number one. Because in Malaysia, everyone has long perceived iProperty to be number one because they've just been here longer, right? And the idea is that consumers then, when you're looking to do something online with property, top of mind, you may start thinking of Property Guru instead of iProperty. And it's just that shouting, bragging rights. And I was talking to someone yesterday night, and they think that it can actually have an impact. If you keep shouting long enough that you're number one, at some point when a consumer wants to look for something online related to property, they may just go to Property Guru instead of iProperty, or, you know, Muda also has got a property section. So it's just those branding rights. But I think the CEO of Property Guru said something interesting, Steve Malhuish, and we had an interview with him on the show. At the end of he said that the big challenge for them is that there's still this big mismatch between media consumption and marketing spend. Media consumption meaning a lot of people are consuming property content online. Mm. So they've got a lot of readership, eyeballs. But the spending money in the property vertical is still going to traditional media. And he said that we need to try to change that. And he says, you know, eyeballs are on online media, but most of the marketing spend goes to traditional media. That's a case actually around the world even. And this, but these guys have raised enough money, right? Last June, they raised $125 million from a consortium. And they've started acquiring companies too, right? They've got an Indonesian property website called rumahdijual.com, which is cool, right? rumahdijual.com. And in January, they acquired real estate media assets from a Thai-based company, which has a luxury property magazine called Property Report and Asian Property Reports too. So they're trying to capture a bigger piece of the offline, you know, as in property assets.
So Rumah Dijual is in Indonesia.
Yeah,
so you know it's just the Indonesian market.
Yes.
I mean, with a name like that.
With
right?
a name like that, yeah.
Which is more than enough.
More than enough, yeah. Okay. I mean, even the China market is more than enough. I was talking to a Chinese-based VC yesterday that has got a $90 million fund focusing on Southeast Asia. I'll do that story for next week, but just a teaser. And they're looking in this region, you know, to start making investment. They've been here 6 months now. They're close to making their first investment, but he sees two trends. One is the Chinese big companies coming and investing direct into the companies here. And the second trend, which is interesting, is that entrepreneurs who worked in these leading Chinese companies, not entrepreneurs, sorry, senior management team who don't have shares in these companies, are now saying that we can replicate the same model in China, in Southeast Asia. So they've quit their jobs and they're coming here and they're launching, you know, copycat models there in the hope that then you can appeal to Chinese investors who understand what you're trying to do, understand your language, but you're now doing it for a region of 600 million people.
And finally, you have a review of a gaming PC this week as well, and this is the first for DNA Gaming. So
yes.
But what brought this about, and why did you have that surreal feeling last night?
Yeah, well, so we actually have a personal tech session, which we lost. Yeah, we launched last year, and then we lost our way in December after the editor running that section quit. We've got a new editor in. And, you know, this is the MSI GE62 Apache Pro. According to Ajit Ram, it's a gamer's dream. So very strong, a gaming PC, and there's a strong gaming subculture in Malaysia too, right?
Huge.
And we just, yeah, huge. Oh, you say huge, so I don't know enough to say it's huge, but it's definitely there. And so he just did a review of the machine. But then the surreal moment was because yesterday then I had to go and buy a digital SLR camera. And those of you know that now these digital cameras also you can do recording. So it can give you up to half an hour of pure high-definition recording. Now, I was in the store, and then very early on, I started feeling that, hey, shouldn't we be buying this online, right? Instead, here you are, guys, from Digital News Asia, you know, looking for a gadget, you know, which is digital in nature, and buying it in a physical store. And it takes time, too, because the store owner then wants to explain things to you, you know, offers to set it up, which they never used to do when I bought my last camera. Mm. And I think you said you experienced that. Your last digital gadget was 3 years ago, right?
3 years ago when I actually bought something in a store.
In a store.
Right.
So I'm curious to know if anyone who has actually walked in the store to buy a digital product, you know, over the last 12 months, especially if you're age 14 below, that would not be the market. So, of course, now I'm 50, so I'm safe. Hey, Karam, you're of that generation. But I mean, up to my eyeballs, up to my turban in this digital ecosystem, right? Yet I walked in the store. I found the experience strange. But then you start asking the shopkeeper, has your business been affected by this trend of people buying devices, actually, right, online? And he said, tak berapa, you know, I was surprised. They've not been affected much. Because he said when you're buying an expensive gadget like that, you still want to come to the store and try it out and test it, and you get a lot more information before you buy it. And I said, yeah, people test that, then they go back and buy it online. He said, no, then you've already tested it and all, you want to get it right away. Why wait for online delivery? And I've been hearing of people whose delivery from their e-commerce merchants has not fulfilled their expectation. They've been upset. And even my own colleague who bought a Mac online says that she would not recommend people to go online to buy it. So she wasn't happy with the experience, even though she saved like 150 ringgit.
Yeah. No, I mean, I go to these things as well. I mean, when I get a phone, you know, they'll just help me with everything, setting
some
it
quick
up.
Thing. Yeah. You want me to download your favorite apps? I'll do it for you. And then as easy as that sounds for some people, that's a bit maybe daunting, especially if you don't have a young kid at home to do it for you, right? No, but this store is amazing. He said rental in the curved ground floor was in the teens. So even if you say it's 15,000, you've got your electricity on 7 days a week for 12 hours a day, right? 10 to 10. You've got a big printing machine there. You know, they print photographs for you on the spot. And then you've got salaries to pay. And at least it's 25,000 ringgit a month in net profit you must make to just cover your costs before you make yours. And can a store like that see that kind of volume going through that they make? And he was saying, you know, margins are so low. I was getting a selfie stick or a tripod for the camera. And, you know, you're trying to negotiate. And he says, no, really, bro, I cannot go beyond this because then, you know, the margins are so thin. And everybody understands margins are very low, right?
Yeah.
A very interesting experience, but it just kind of made me feel strange that I was doing it, you know, physically. But then you remind yourself, only 1.5% of e-commerce of retail buying in Malaysia goes online. Mm. A huge majority is still offline, right? Mm. So maybe that explains why these guys can still survive. And people always seem to be coming in and wanting to take a picture behind a blue screen, you know. I don't know why that is. So maybe that's an idea for someone to create an app. Instead of walking into the store, get your blue screen, you know, through this app, and then we'll deliver your picture to you in 3 hours. Because you've got people now offering 3-hour delivery, right?
Yeah. So that's all for this week's
very measured
tech talk. Very measured. Yes.
I could hear myself talking.
Karam
just saying
from Digital News Asia. Oh yeah, happy Vaisakhi, which was last week.
Yes. Okay. Thank you very much.
Tech Talk BFM 89.9.
Chakaday.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.